Welcome, ESPN 1700 AM, the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
Big Mac, David McKelvin,
and myself, Ryan White. We have with us today, might even be fifth time, George Samuels.
Fifth time. At least, yeah.
Repetition works, huh?
Hopefully. It might sink in now after the fifth time.
George Samuels is a CPA, but really, his alias today is the Profit Coach. Surprised you're able to make time for us, this being tax season and all.
There's always time for good clients and getting the word out. Not too many people want to really talk to me during August and September, but March and February, I'm a hot commodity.
You're a popular guy.
His
website, profitcoach.net, that's his website. And ahead of us, we're going to talk about the six steps to building an extraordinary business. Also here today, Robert Campbell. He is the originator of Real Estate Timing. That's a bold statement right there. Seasoned veteran of both good and bad real estate cycles, creator of the Campbell Method for tracking trends to buy and sell, and an author of Timing the Real Estate Market. Welcome.
Thank you.
Surprisingly enough, we're going to talk about timing the real estate market as well.
That's my favorite topic.
It's your favorite topic. Okay, great.
We got to get that right.
Okay. Yeah, we got to get that right. Okay, first, six steps to building an extraordinary business. And I would imagine one might argue there's maybe more in there than six, but you've been able to boil it down to something of a formula, right? And that's what one would expect out of a coach. You do these things and you win, right? That's why someone would come to you.
Exactly. Much in the same way, here we are at ESPN, that a football coach would – there's six ways to win a football game. Well, we know there's more behind the scenes than the six ways or buying and selling stocks. I always say, yeah, buy low, sell high. That's it. And it is actually quite more involved. People have a tendency to shrink wrap what a business advisor really is and make it more into a commodity. But in reality, it's trying to reach business people at a much deeper level and be that trusted advisor, which as a CPA, people already have that perception amongst what CPAs provide. But growing your own business can be a very lonely proposition, and one that takes somebody that doesn't have a vested equity interest in your business, but one that can really help out and
see it as an outsider almost.
Exactly, yeah. But be there as that shoulder to talk to and go through the motions of how to grow out of the box. It's that small, medium-sized business growth, how to get to the next level, and that's what I specialize in.
I remember when you've been on before, you're talking of, because you're a CPA, you're looking at these P&L statements, profit and loss statements all the time. And the obvious thing is to, of course, trim expenses. You know, that seems to be the obvious one. But really, I remember very vividly, but by commonly trimming expenses, you're also trimming potential growth, like advertising.
Absolutely, because in historically, people look to accountants to trim expenses and give me some ideas on how I can cut expenses. But the reality is, after you've cut 10%, and most business owners, they know what that 10% is if you ask them. They don't need the financial statements. But once you're through that 10%, you're really not cutting the expenses. You're cutting into your revenue stream. And so most accountants focus on that right side of the business ledger, where I focus on the left side is of what I call the profit equation. The left side is more customer acquisition, customer retention, creating that average sale value and how you bundle your service or product together, and the frequency of which people use your product or service. Those are the key dynamics. If you want to bundle this thing down to the core elements of how to grow your business, those are the areas to focus on.
You know, it seems to me that with today's economy, with the internet, with the different dynamics of the consumer these days, that they're just every single day there are new ways to market your company, to spend marketing money. You know, I would imagine that when you're looking at these P&Ls, you can see where someone is spending too much money on experimental marketing, maybe not enough money on marketing that actually is proven to work, and perhaps not enough time and effort on those areas that are really efficient return on investment, meaning getting referrals from your current clients. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, absolutely. And when you hit a very key point, most people spend 90% of their advertising budget, 90% of their time in that cold marketplace trying to develop new customers and throwing good money after bad. Whereas if you can nurture and create that sense of perceived value amongst your existing customer base and figure out host beneficiary relationships, referral, you know, those are tactical ways, but those are the ways to really grow the business without spending the big dollars. And that's a very key point.
Now, I remember you talking about this, and I'm just going to go back just a little bit to the simple – we can all agree that to improve the bottom line, you remove expenses. I mean, that's simple enough. And we're hoping to go deeper than that because, really, if that's all you're after, you don't need a profit coach. I mean, I think on your own, you can figure out ways to cut expenses. But the goal is to find ways to increase the revenue
right.
without – suffering massive increases in expenses, and that's really where the coach comes into play.
Exactly. And no one's ever really created an extraordinary business by trimming expenses. The only way they've grown an extraordinary business out of an ordinary business is by growing that top line. And when you do that, not only your customers are usually happy and they love you more, but your own team members and the people you work with enjoy what they're doing, and life is much more of a happy centered business.
You know, when I look at business and life, I'm thinking to myself, a lot of times you can buy a business. You know, you buy a business, you know, you buy yourself a job. Next thing you know, you're getting up at 6 in the morning, you're making the donuts, whatever widget you have to be working on. You know, so I would imagine somewhere in here you've got to include lifestyle, right? Because if we cut expenses and cut expenses down to, now you've got to, you know, do something you may not want to do that is super efficient that produces results but takes all your time. So you've got this expenditure of time versus expenditure of money. I mean, wouldn't it be great to get to a point where you just simply wrote a check and the marketing that you had put in place worked and returned a value, and then you can just outsource some of the processes and actually create a great life for yourself?
You must have read the books.
Well, I mean,
because
we're in business
seriously,
for ourselves as well.
Exactly. And what is, if you go to the key element of why people go into business, you cut through all the mustard, as they say, it's to create a life, to create a business that works without you. Maybe not now, maybe not in 10 years, but that is the goal, to create something that's working even when you're sleeping, as Muhammad Ali once said.
I also see people that'll invest and claim that they've got this great business that they're building, but yet they're not actually harvesting a return on it yet. They're still looking for the future for a payoff, for a buyout or something like that, some golden parachute they're looking for in the future. So, you know, I see here that not every shoe fits for every business owner. So, you know, there's obviously – looking at all these different P&Ls, different directions that you might take somebody based on their ultimate goal.
True. And actually, it's a key point of what I do as a business advisor. I try to reach people at a much deeper level than one might think of as far as an accountant or a CPA. And in fact, you mentioned about looking at P&Ls. I mean, it's kind of a misnomer when I call myself the profit coach, because, you know, the biggest opportunity to grow a business is not on the financial statements. It's in the goodwill value of the business. It's in the opportunity or the lost opportunity. So on the one hand, as you say, not every business is unique, and that's what everybody always usually comes at me with. Well, what do you know about my specific business? What do you know about the real estate business? What do you know about the bakery business? The technical part of what we do is unique to ourselves, but the actual ingredients of what makes a successful business is universal. And that's what I try to reach. And it's a journey process. It's not a destination. We've all heard that expression. You know, there is no there. It's all about the journey. Once you achieve that mountain, there's more mountains. And what I provide is that coaching ability to work with people to get them to the next level of where they want to go.
We're talking with George Samuels. He is the Profit Coach. His website, ProfitCoach.net. That's the website, ProfitCoach.net. 6 steps to building an extraordinary business. You have here as number 1, understanding purpose, setting the destination. What does that mean?
means that it is a journey process. It's much like people talk in abstract. They say, many business owners I talk to, it's like they know where they want to go, but they don't really know where they're at. Or they know where they're at, but they don't know where they want to go. And the terms that everybody uses, I want to be the best quality, I want the best service, those are abstract numbers. But what I do with people is sit down and set tangible goals, the what ifs. How do we get to that extra $100,000 of net income? And it is a process. And it's oftentimes you have to measure it. And there's a key saying here that'll slip out, but it's awesome. And it's what I say is what you can measure, you can manage. What you can manage, you can control. And what you can control, you can leverage. And business is all about leverage. That is the essence of what business is all about.
Say that one more time. The whole thing.
What you can measure, you can manage. What you can manage, you can control. And what you can control, you can leverage. And business purpose is all about leverage.
I do remember you saying from past shows that one of the big techniques you're able to bring to the table is measuring what marketing systems are working, you know, putting a formula behind what's working so you can identify, you know, instead of spending my money blind with a shotgun approach, I'm gonna target, perhaps after I do that experiment, I'm going to go back and target the different areas that really worked. That
yes,
seems pretty important.
It is. And there was a famous advertising maven named Sam Wanamaker. And his classic saying was, I know that 50% of my advertising works. I just don't know which 50%. And when you combine that knowledge along with what I call the 80-20 rule, that 80% of our efforts generate 20% of our profits and vice versa, it is key to measure these kinds of things. And it's things like lifetime value of a customer. And if I say to you as a business owner, are you measuring that? They say, well, what do you mean by that? And I say, well, let's talk about it. And once you find that out, do your team members know what that means? Because how many environments do we go into, restaurants or just Main Street USA, and we get cheesed off by the person behind the counter having a bad hair day, and they think, oh, well, what the heck, that was $20. We don't need him anymore. Well, I come in there every day or every week, spend my $20, and it might be several thousand dollars a year. So they just lost that, and that might have been for 2 or 3 years. So it could be a $3,000 or $4,000 customer that frontline person let walk out the door. So it's critical, not only am I working with the business owners, but making the frontline people, the team members, understand what the purpose of the business is and training them to grow the business also.
We're talking with George Samuels. He is the Profit Coach. His website, profitcoach.net. That's his website, profitcoach.net. Going over the 6 steps to building an extraordinary business. We've just gotten to number 1. When we come back, we're going to talk with Robert Campbell about timing the real estate market. Ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. We were talking with George Samuels, the Profit Coach. One more time, his website, profitcoach.net. That's his website, profitcoach.net.
You know, it seems to me that what you're taking, George, is the emotion out of this calculation of that, you know, really enthusiastic business owner that's like, I'm taking that hill. You know, and you're saying, wait a second, once you get to that hill, there's going to be more hills ahead of you, but there may be a lifestyle that you can manage if we do it right, if we can manage those numbers and control them, as you had mentioned in that little saying that you had that was so nice. But, you know, one of the things that I feel really plays a role in whether or not a business is a success, right or wrong, that's my opinion, is timing. And when we're talking about real estate, there's a lot of real estate timing going on, and that's why we have Robert Campbell here today, the originator of the Real Estate Timing, the Real Estate Market book that you wrote,
yes,
which is still really very much so in demand. You're getting a lot of hits on your website every single day.
Correct.
And you're also working with a newsletter for those people that are really interested in finding out what's going on month to month. So, you know, when you are out there analyzing these things, you know, we want to know what is going on in the market. So how do you predict the best time to buy a house?
My predictions come from exactly what I write about in the book, David. There's five key indicators that I follow that tend to be leading indicators to major turning points in the market. In other words, so they're predictors in that much that they're following trends, that certain indicators start to make different moves at different times when the market starts to go up and when it starts to go down. So it gives you about a 3 to 6 month lead time, as far as making the best buying and selling decisions.
So once you've mastered these six steps, right?
Right.
You can really kind of keep an eye on what's going on and make these, you know, mental adjustments to, okay, now it's a buyer's market, now it's a seller's market. I mean, honestly, I see people that are on the wrong cycle,
right?
They buy low and, well, buy low, sell high, that's the right way to do it. But I see them buy high, sell low, buy high, sell low. And, you know, you do a buy high, sell low a few times in your life when you're talking about real estate, you can end up in not the greatest position when, you know, you get ready to retire. However, if you can get off that cycle and get on the buy low, sell high cycle, or simply buy right and not sell cycle, you know, this is the Robert Kiyosaki plan, right? So you acquire this good debt and you hang on to it, producing a passive income for yourself. So how is it – what are the four strategies that you find that work for all types of real estate cycles?
Well, here are the cycles. Here's how all cycles go through – what they all go through, David. And it's pretty obvious. But there's an up cycle. Then real estate prices flatten out for a period of time. Then they go in a down cycle, and they flatten out for a period of time. What my key indicators are able to tell you is when that flattening period occurs at the peaks and at the valleys, which means you have some choices. Either, hopefully when they're at the peak, if you decide that now's the time to unload some of your real estate, sell some of it, and take profits, that's when to do it. Whereas if you're speculating on the cycles, you want to be acquiring at the low point in the cycle, and that's essentially what the indicators tell you. It's really remarkable how they work. I mean, to be honest with you, that markets don't make moves without giving advance warning signals. People are totally unaware of that, but that's just the way the world works. So if you stay on your toes, you can see these turns coming, and you can make a lot more money than other people that aren't watching anything. Like you say, they tend to buy high and sell low instead of the other way around, for the simple reason that they let fear and greed enter the equation, like we were talking about previously. People tend to be fearful when they should be greedy at the bottom of the cycles, and they tend to be greedy, like near the top, when they should be fearful. And that's not only real estate, guys. That's the stock market, the gold market, the real estate market, the bond market. That's the way God hardwired us, to be emotional and do the wrong thing at the wrong time.
You know, if you're just tuning in, we're listening to Robert Campbell from realestatetiming.com. You know, Robert has written books. He's got an MBA in finance from SD State. He, you know, grew up locally here in San Diego. You live here in San Diego, and you're producing this newsletter that you're broadcasting across the United States to the subscribers that are really keeping on top of what's happening in the real estate market based on these strategies, these key indicators that you're following.
Correct.
You know, and I got to say that a lot of times I see when people are making these decisions, they're making them based on taxes, right? They're looking at, hey, you know what, I've got – a capital gains issue if I sell my investment property, therefore I'm going to hang on to it. I know there's people out there right now that are listening to us that are saying, I'm that guy. I'm the guy that decided to hold on to my real estate based on the fact that I didn't want to pay the taxes. And now, look, I lost all the profits. Maybe you lost it in the market.
Yeah, they don't want to sell and incur a big tax loss, so they'd rather ride the cycle down and have no profits to be taxed. I tend to focus on capital preservation as opposed to preserving taxes.
I got a little engineer talk in me here, so pardon if it gets a little too geeky here, but I would imagine we're looking at some kind of sine wave.
Correct.
Up and down, right?
Absolutely.
And you take the average of the sine waves, the highs and lows, and there's some gentle, gradual increase, I would imagine, over the last 200 years, 300 years. You probably know what that is.
Right.
But, you know, the idea is, so you hold it for the long term, yeah, there's money to be made, even if you buy it wrong.
Correct.
But a lot of our people aren't holding it for the long term. So really what I'm asking, and this is really the nerding out part, is the inflection point, which means where the going up at a rate, at a certain rate, begins to taper off. Inflection points, where you're going up, you level out, you come back down. What's the average duration we're looking? So if I'm in a certain cycle now, what kind of time frame do I have to wait till the cycle changes? And I know that's not – that's a very generic question, but we're not talking months or days, I don't think.
No.
What are we looking at?
I would say the typical cycle, Ryan, lasts 4 to 6 years on the upside and 4 to 6 years on the downside. And what you have to be particularly aware of here in Southern California and in California in general, we have the most cyclical real estate market in the United States. We have more booms, more busts because the real estate's high priced and we go through the and we're the biggest economy in the United States. And it's just a fact of life that our cycles are more pronounced both to the upside and the downside for the last 30 years. So you've got to be aware of these cycles.
It kind of seems to me that patience has a lot to do with this. I was showing a house yesterday to an economist, and he came up with all the reasons that this was not the right house for him and all the reasons – okay, good enough. And all the reasons the homeowner should sell it low because the market's going to do bad things.
And market's going to crash.
He went through all the things that were going to happen that were bad.
Right.
And so I asked him, okay, well, I mean, I'm not going to argue with you, but if all these bad things are going to happen – why are you looking at houses?
Right.
And so it all came down to, well, we have a baby. Yeah. We want to buy a house. It was really interesting to see that – I'm not saying his opinion was right or wrong, but he had an opinion.
Right.
And he was doing the complete opposite of what he thought was going
to
happen.
Well, I think that, you know, to I can see his point that maybe he thinks the market's going to crash. But what I tell people is that if you can own a home – if you're buying a home to live in and you've got a good job and you can afford it, and especially at these interest rates, buy the damn thing. You got to live somewhere. But when it comes to speculating in real estate, hopefully, you know, not a lot of people speculate on the home they live in. It's a home. But we're talking about rental properties and pure investments as far as when to buy them, when to sell them to make the most money.
Sure, there's a huge value in actually using the asset that you're investing in.
Absolutely.
In fact, you might actually classify the primary house as not an investment.
Exactly.
As a home that you're going to live in and use. And if it goes up, if you're watching the market indicators and
right.
you sell at the appropriate time,
right.
it'll probably do well. In fact, it'll probably hedge better than deflation in terms of the value of the money. So in years to come, it's likely that the sale of the property will outweigh the cost of the money to have depreciated if you put it in the bank. Plus, the government's out there really giving away money, right? They're holding interest rates down.
Right.
And if you're not watching what's going on in the economy, you're not aware that they're slowing the purchasing of these bonds, which are holding these interest rates down.
Right.
They're holding interest rates down. That is a gift. That's an indication
right.
that you're getting a lower interest rate than's coming. If we look at what the predictions are, year over year, we're seeing about 1% increase. This is a $200 plus increase in payment per month for a homeowner that waits year over year. That's about $74,000 over the life of the loan. So every year someone decides to wait given these lower interest rates, potentially it's costing them thousands of dollars on the end. However, those are just part of the calculations. The other calculation are these key indicators.
Right.
So if you're looking at these indicators right now, I don't want to – well, let me put you on the spot a little bit. What's happening in this market?
Okay.
We had a huge run on values last year, unsustainable. Are we reaching a market right now that's stabilizing?
Well, it's not stabilizing, David. It's going up. It's still going up. And the 90% of the predictions I make regarding the real estate market are all based on my real estate timing model, I have to tell you. It's right 85% of the time, and I'm a smart enough guy that know that's a very high percentage rate. So don't argue with my timing model. But for example, here in San Diego County, San Diego flashed a buy signal in April 2010. And we're still on that buy signal. You guys are in the business. You boys are in the business. Was that a good time to buy?
It's a great time to buy.
And it's still going up. And by the way, the those of you that have that memories that go, you know, more than 2 or 3 years in the past, it gave a sell signal in – to show you the accuracy of this model, they gave you a sell signal in August 2005, which was 1 month prior to the peak of the market on the Case-Shiller. So in other words, Now, I mean, certain things – when real estate decisions are big decisions, and you might as well have the best information going for you as far as when you make these decisions. Like right now, if you said, do you think it's a – would you rather be a buyer or seller of a rental property in this market? Being as we're on 4 years on the upcycle right now, I think that it's – I would wait on buying rental property, but I would not wait on buying a home to live in. I think we're long in this cycle.
We're talking with Robert Campbell, his website, realestatetiming.com. You can go there, get part of it, get his newsletter, get his book. One more time, realestatetiming.com. He told us a little bit about the fact that our cycle's up. When we come back, we're going to talk to George Samuels, a profit coach, and I'm going to make him predict when we're going to stop going up ahead of us when we come back. Welcome back. We were just talking with Robert Campbell, his website, realestatetiming.com. That's his website, realestatetiming.com. Look up his book, Timing the Real Estate Market, as well as get on his mailing list for his monthly newsletter. Figure out exactly when, apparently, this upswing is going to end. We're going to get into that a little bit later before segment. Before we do, we're going to talk with the profit coach, George Samuels.
Yes, sir. And I would like to take a moment here to riff off Bob's, Robert's couple of minutes there, because as much as you think real estate timing is a whole different can of worms than running a business, the words I was hearing were like music to my ears. And if only all businesses could run their business with some of the words that you were saying, words like key indicators, leading indicators, lagging indicators. Yet how many businesses do we know that we go in? What indicators? There is no indicator other than a bad hair day is the indicator. And who the heck's running the business? Is it the owner or is it his secretary or is the owner even there and does he even know what's going on with the team members? But if you focus on some of, and not only the owner, I have to stress this, but the team members of what the leading indicators and what the key indicators of performance are expected and demanded to run a successful business, Right. Everybody's just kind of, I use the equivalent, here we are at ESPN, like running a football practice or a football game in a scrimmage, and we're all out there throwing the pass on the, and there's no 10-yard markers. We're just having a good old time playing catch, and we know we're headed in the right direction, maybe. But is it third down? Is it second down? Is it, you know? It's just stunning how we wing it so much in business, and it doesn't need to be codified to the point where we're just we're robots. In fact, you really need to step back and run away from that being a commodity world because, you know, otherwise we're all going to be elements of Google, Walmart, and Big Brother telling us what to do. The coaching that I represent is what I call Main Street coaching. It's not the Fortune 500 or the real big firms. It's the guy with his vested capital out there. And I just really had that little pitch to say. And also, we talk a little bit about the timing and what's the real value, you know, and people's emotions getting in the way. How often does that really occur in business? It happens daily, and it's not really rational. It's pure emotions, and we know what we live with when we get married. You know, hell, that's based on love and forgiveness. But when it comes to a business, we're all out there looking for something to measure ourselves by.
Well, you know, when we're talking about measuring, what we're really talking about, in my opinion, is education, right? You're either going to pay for it because you don't know, or you're going to have to go through the process of learning it so you do know. Certainly, we can't predict exactly when the right market time is to buy and sell and exactly what the right widget or how. But generally speaking, with an educated approach, it seems as though the statistics don't lie that if you do X, Y, and Z, you'll be profitable.
True, and it's education. It's a constant education. It's a constant education for the business owner. And I must say where the value that I provide is most business owners, the problem, it's a double-edged sword. Their egos is what got them into the business to begin with. It's what Michael Gerber calls they had an entrepreneurial seizure. They woke up one night saying, heck, I can do this business better than that jerk I'm working for, and I'm a good technician, so heck, I'll get more customers. I'll just lower the price a little bit and grow the business that way. And yet, you know, we're up in today's world. We're up against Big Brother and Walmart.
I see all kind of red flags when you say that. I mean, you know, people think they've got it, and they don't realize what it takes to actually budget and market and measure and run a real business, right?
Exactly. And you mentioned the budget. I mean, that's a whole other element of having a cash plan, because what, you know, listen to people and they say, what's the key thing of a business? It's knowing where your cash is, you know? I can't tell you the amount of times people count their cash five times and all of a sudden they just don't have it. They count it once when it's a receivable, once when they collect it, and once when they think it's still in the bank and it's not there anymore. But if they have a cash plan and they go through the cycle, even for a very small business to have it on the back of a napkin, what's his cash plan for the next 6 months, for the next year? Accuracy is not as critical as the goal of setting the goal, setting the destination. The infamous saying, most people aim at nothing and hit it with tremendous accuracy. And that is so true in business. But when you switch on the team members and your employees and you're focused on the customer, creating a customer-centered business, the customers will be good to you financially and otherwise, and then you'll be happier and you'll be better people to your spouses, and everybody's happy. And now all of a sudden we have a life as opposed to spending all night long doing it past midnight.
We're talking with George Samuels, the Profit Coach. His website, profitcoach.net. That's his website, profitcoach.net. One thing I wanted to make a really clear distinction on here, and we touched on a little bit, and I think it's really worth coming back to. In my mind, there's a distinction between a job and a business. And so the job means that I'm there every day, 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm making this widget. I make widgets for 60 years. The end of 60 years, I'm done making widgets, and I can retire. Maybe I own some real estate, maybe I don't.
Or as Bob Dylan once said, I worked for 10 years and I finally got off the midnight shift.
Or more of a business, meaning that you can get this machine going and you can be sitting on an island in Hawaii while your company is making widgets. And in 60-some years, you can still retire, own some real estate, and not have had to make widgets all your life. It really seems like that distinction is exactly where a coach would come in.
Absolutely, and we've had this discussion before that when people sell their businesses, the value is not in the business, but it's in fact in the real estate. Those entrepreneurs that were fortunate to look ahead and say, instead of paying rent to somebody else, I'll buy the place. And over a period of 20 years, the value is in the real estate. It's the same thing at McDonald's. You know, McDonald's all these years, everybody thinks the value is in the hamburgers, and it's not. It's actually in the French fries. But it's the majority of it's in the real estate, the land that McDonald's as a corporation owns. And so you really have to – the real estate can be a key part. But the thing, again, riffing off of what we talked about before, is the value of the home or the value of the business. If you measure and you work on your business so you can create a life and eventually retire and make some money from the business, think about every little improvement that you make. If you work on the three ways to grow the business, not only are you growing the business and creating perhaps a net income of another $50,000 or $100,000 annually, but you're creating a multiple of earnings of value, tangible value, when you sell the business. And that's the thing that most business owners, if they've been in business for more than a couple of years, they're now looking at the exit strategy of what will this be worth when I'm done. So not only as a coach am I improving your annual bottom line or your top line, but at the same time you have to throw in the multiple of value of the earnings of the business itself.
We're talking with George Samuels. He is the Profit Coach. His website, profitcoach.net. That's his website, profitcoach.net. Talking about the 6 steps to building an extraordinary business. We talked about number 1, and moving on to number 2, focus like a laser on growth. What does that mean?
Focus like a laser on growth is ever heard the expression of crisis management? You know, most people run around in their business going from one crisis management to another. I can't tell you the amount of times I've gone into people's business, and I love to go into people's business rather than them coming to me so I can learn and understand the nature of their business. The more I understand it, the more value I can create. But there's been several people that when I go meet them for the first time, they're constantly getting barraged and interrupted by all sorts of people. And it's just putting off one headache after another. There's no systemizing of the process. And I have to defer to my guru, Michael Gerber. He says the key to any business is to systemize 90%, humanize the 10%. And if you can create those kinds of systems, it's kind of the franchise concept, but not that you want a franchise, but that you're actually building the systems so the systems are working, not the people. So much of business is people-oriented rather than the process or the system. And it's not the assembly line system that I'm talking about, but the selling systems, the script of selling, the way people answer the phone, the difference it makes when you talk to your customers, the cycle of customer interaction. Every time you talk to the customer, what is being said? Is it being said consistently from all the employees, or is it, oh, this person does a great job, but this person is not so hot? Well, the person that's doing a great job, are they training the other employees so it's more consistent and predictable? The more predictableness you can create, then you're taking an ordinary people in an ordinary system, creating an extraordinary process. I'm always stunned. I use McDonald's, how you can get a 16-year-old kid that won't even make his bed, get out there and flip burgers, and the system works. Not the best burgers in the world, but the system works like very predictable and very successfully. And the goal of any small or medium-sized business is trying to create those systems and to be able to focus like a laser. Because the one thing I like to call myself, the 3D guy, I can literally go into a business and look around at just walking around and seeing the systems and the processes and finding out what's not working and seeing what is working and using that as a vehicle. It's almost like a fundamental shift that when you can make one of these little improvements, you can have a significant improvement in your bottom line.
We're talking with George Samuels, the Profit Coach. One more time, his website, profitcoach.net. We're talking about the 6 steps to building an extraordinary business. We only got to 1 and 2. Go to his website for more information. One more time, profitcoach.net. When we come back, I'm going to have Robert Campbell explain to me what indicators are leading him to believe the market is going up, and make a prediction as to when he suspects the market is going to stop going up. Ahead of us when we come back. We're going to talk about selling a business at the peak of the market. We're back with Robert Campbell, George Samuels. You heard from George Samuels, the Profit Coach, his website, profitcoach.net. Robert Campbell here is going to talk all about timing, selling a business at the peak of the market, selling real estate at the peak of the market, but really how to time the market. And he tells me there's 5 indicators. I'm going to have him discuss what those 5 indicators are. And he mentions the indicators are pointing with an upswing in real estate. I also want to find out when he determines this upswing is going to stop. Robert?
Oh, thank you. Yes, absolutely. There's 5 key indicators that I've used, that I've researched going back to 1982, and knowing the real estate market as well as I know it, because I come from a real estate family, and I jokingly tell people I was born on a real estate construction site. So I've been through the cycles from the time I was a little kid all the way up through now. So these 5 key indicators, they've been researched as far back as you can go, and they individually, they tend to point tell you when the market's losing momentum and going to start going down, and when it's picking up momentum and start going up. And you can't rely on only one. You have to use all 5, and that's part of my timing model. But let me go over each of those 5 indicators, and anybody can follow them. Indicator number 1, and this is the most accurate, the biggest leading indicator, that's existing home sales. Indicator number 2 is new home building permits, and these are for individual cities, of course, and 17 of which I follow in the United States. Indicator number 3 is notice of defaults. Indicator number 4 is foreclosure sales, and indicator number 5 is interest rates. So there's nothing magic about any of this data. We hear about it all the time, you know, every month. This is all reported data, along with about, you know, 20 other pieces of real estate information that you should ignore if you want to time the real estate market correctly. But this is all available to everybody. And if you follow these key indicators and use the timing model, as I explain it in my book, the statistical tracking way to track these indicators, hey, you'll know when to buy low and sell high too.
I would imagine each of these 5 indicators play a key role in the analysis, meaning if you're seeing a lot of foreclosure show up, it could be that we're either in a down market or we're beginning to experience the wave of a down market. An indicator would be thumbs down, do not buy real estate.
Correct.
Right? Wait on buying real estate.
Correct.
So in your book, you describe, you know, if you see indicator X, Y, and Z, you know, now it's time to buy
right.
based on the fact that I've got a 6-year prediction up and down market.
Right.
So if we're in the middle of an up market, I would say that it's probably safe to buy for the next 2 or 3 years a primary residence, or like you had mentioned before, we're long into the cycle,
right.
and perhaps investment property is off the table right now.
Yes, going back to investment property, I wouldn't be afraid of buying a home right now at these low interest rates, assuming you have a good job and you can afford to keep the job through the down cycle that is most likely inevitable. However, with rental property, because it's a pure investment, you want to be buying that low and selling that high. I would hold off on that right now. But the 5 key indicators for San Diego, which I think all San Diegans would like to know about, my 5 key indicators in the trend direction here for San Diego County, it's existing home sales. The trend is still up slightly, but it's turning down. That's the first negative red flag that's going up. New home building permits. Those are still up nicely. Notice the defaults. Those are still trending down, which is a good sign. Foreclosure sales. Those are trending down. And interest rates for the first time in about 4 years have finally turned from going down to going up, because as you know, the low in the interest rate market was about 12, 15 months ago. 30-year fixed was at 3.375. Today it's at 4.5. So we've lost some of the interest rate. But overall, the weight of the evidence still is showing you that real estate is more likely to appreciate than depreciate in at least the next coming 3 to 6 months.
If you're just tuning in, we are listening to Robert Campbell, realestatetiming.com, wrote a book, MBA in finance from SD State, locally grown, and lives right here in San Diego County. And he's got a lot of predictions as far as what's going on. It seems as though, based on the trends, the key indicators that you're analyzing, buying investment property right now may not be the right thing to do unless the calculation is a buy and hold forever and you want to produce an income for your portfolio. It seems as though that really understanding the economic cycles can play a key role in gathering your wealth throughout your life.
Right. Because absolutely, I mean, San Diego and California in particular, as I mentioned previously, we're a boom-bust state, a boom-bust economy. Our cycles are more pronounced than in other places of the country like Dallas, Texas. Dallas, Texas, prices hardly move at all, but they don't go down much either. So, I mean, the game we're playing here is capital appreciation. So with respect, I think that you asked what my predictions are for the future, and based on the length of this cycle and some of the weakness that I'm starting to see, not downward weakness, but slowing and upward momentum in these key indicators, I would say that most likely that we are still good for at least the middle to the three-quarter end of 2014, but it wouldn't surprise me in the least if we start seeing a new down cycle slash bust emerge in the late part of 2014 or early 2015.
You know, those the millennials, or Gen Y, as some people call it out there, that are entering the market, and some of these folks are coming out of college with student debt, obviously. Some of them are coming out with student debt that have great loans or a great job, and they're looking to invest or buy in real estate because they're establishing a family and they're getting involved. This generation is a generation that usually is blindsided by these cycles because they see the appreciation, they see interest rates going up, they jump in, eyes wide open, but uneducated in terms of the cycles that we're experiencing or have experienced based on
right.
longevity in our careers.
That's a really, really good point, David. They're young. I mean, I have two kids that are 29 and 31 years old. And, yeah, they've got a lot of brains, but they have no experience. And what are they driven by when they see housing prices keep going up during the upcycle? They're driven by greed.
Takeaway clothes.
Yeah. Are they afraid of anything yet? No, they don't know enough to be afraid yet. And that's why my dad always taught me. He's was in the building business for developing business for 50 years. He said, don't take investment advice from anybody that's under 50 years old. And I said, why? And he said, because they haven't had their head in the cement mixer enough times. And that's old school wisdom. And that's what these kids, they jump in. And if I was a kid right now, a young kid coming in, I would, even if you think you have a good job, because you may not, I would probably hold off on buying a home. But if you're older and you have some wealth underneath your wings, you know, and you've got, you're solid, I'd buy a home right now.
Well,
long should you hold off on buying a home?
Well, probably let's say that my educated guess is correct, that sometime late 2014, early 2015, the market cycle starts heading down. Well, if we get the typical down cycle like we did, you know, the last two down cycles, we're talking, you know, 4 to 6 years again. And so we'd probably be 215. We'd probably be buying the place, but you'd probably be buying a home to live in. I'd probably suggest you renting as opposed to buying until like 2019 or 2020.
Wow.
You want to buy at the bottom, guys.
We're just tuning in. We're talking with Robert Campbell, his website, realestatetiming.com, with his prediction. He said if you're a young kid out there, not a whole lot of wealth under your boat, may want to wait on buying a house.
But, you know, when it comes to selling, you know, you want to leave some money on the table for that next guy. You don't want it to be clearly a buyer's market, because then you're on the flip side of that negotiation.
Right.
You know, when I see the negotiation, I see that if you're looking at your numbers, that the buy time is completely different from the sell time, because you want to harvest as much gain as you possibly can and leave a little bit of money on the table so that that next guy feels comfortable and confident when he buys that property.
You still want to buy, David, while the trend is still up but starting to roll over, because most people are totally unaware of these cycles. They aren't that sensitive to the cycles. And in other words, that's how you can end up selling at the peak, because most people aren't aware of it until it starts turning down.
One more time, Robert Campbell, his website, realestatetiming.com. That's his website, realestatetiming.com. Also, George Samuels, the Profit Coach, his website, profitcoach.net. That's the website, profitcoach.net. Gentlemen, thank you both. Coming up next.